Good afternoon, honorable members. We are going to start. I just want members to see me. I am not in a... I'm here. I will... we are going to start with our presentation from both the...
CCMA recording in progress.
And the compensation fund and CCMA. And I want to thank members for coming and understanding the change of our normal slot was a necessitated by circumstances beyond our control. And I hope members will understand that there are days like that. We're all from the SONA debate and from the reply. I hope at an appropriate time when we'll be preparing for our budget speech, we'll then be able to pick up on the issues that have been raised in SONA, which are then a pointer to us. And I think by that, we're going to have a very busy year in moving forward, I think even towards the end of our term. Having said that, honorable members, we'll go straight to the House rules and welcoming everybody. I see the DM is also here. He has joined us. I'll hand over to Mr. Sakaza for him to take us through the roll call. Thank you very much, Mr. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to all members and the Ministry and the Department of Employment and Labor. Chair, today we have from the Portfolio Committee on Employment and Labor the following members. We've got yourself, Chair, Honorable Dunjwa, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Makhubele, Honorable Mdabe, and we are also joined by Honorable Jacobs. We also have Honorable Bagram, Honorable Kado, Honorable Mkonto, Honorable Denner, and Honorable Ngcobo Chair. That's from members. And then from the support staff, we've got myself, Chair, Mr. Ngcobo, Content Advisor, Ms. Ndabeni, Content Committee Assistant, Mr. Maputi, Communications Officer, Mr. Mkwena, the Researcher Chair. I see Honorable Nonsele is just joining in, Chair. So we've got Honorable Nonsele as well. Thank you, Chair. That's all from my side.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sakaza. DM your team, but I don't see the DG. DM?
Afternoon, Chairperson. I am here myself. The DG did speak to me earlier on, and I take it that he said he was going to communicate with the chairperson because he just got a call that his wife has been admitted in hospital. So he was flying out, rushing to Gauteng. And over and above that, Honorable Chairperson, amongst us, we have the Commissioner for Compensation Fund, Ndadevuyo Mafata, we have the Director, Executive Director from CCMA, Ndade Morajani. It's not Mukhajani, it's Morajani. I think amongst us also, we've got Karabo Makhakhane from our office. We have also, our Chief of Staff from the Ministry, Ntate Kangala Mudumela, from the Ministry, and those that I might not have seen. I did mention, we got also Dr. Tandoa Baba. I have mentioned our commissioner from Compensation Fund. And I think as they speak, they will also introduce those who come from CF and those who come from CCMA. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, JM. Welcome, Honorable Jacobs, and we know that you are a regular in our committee, and we appreciate that. We so wish other members can also do the same. And you are welcome. You feel free to ask questions. You know what rules are then saying in terms of if there are other areas that will need us to vote. Unfortunately, you won't be able to do that. But in terms of participating, you are free to do that. I'm of the understanding that Mr. Sakaza have got visitors here. Can they introduce themselves, please? Because I don't want to be seen as being harsh. I don't know why visitors of late are refusing to introduce themselves, which means those that are not coming from the department, no parliament, or they are not members of parliamentary staff, and they are not members of either of any of the houses. I see there's somebody from PNG who is just not prepared for us to know that she is here. I see she has then now, she's out, which then that is fine if that's how they. So come again.
Sorry, I'm saying from PNG, I think she's raised her hand. It's Roselle Vincent. Maybe she wanted to introduce herself.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Wenzel, your hand is up. Hello. Okay. Yes, can hear you. Thank you. Thank you. The others, when then the entities are making presentation, they will then indicate who is from. Thank you very much, DM. The DG did call me, indicated that he has got that urgent family responsibility that he had to attend. And I then said to them that is fine. I think we are all aware, honorable members, that the minister has attended a meeting, a summit in Botswana. So that's why he is not with us. I think, honorable members, it's important that I start here before the compensation fund make a presentation. First, I want to appreciate those of us that logged in yesterday in a meeting that the department was called to Scopa to come and respond to some questions and make some presentation, which was then the compensation fund. Some of us were there. And that sitting was necessitated by the AG's report that the Scopa had a preview of. Unfortunately, with us, we are meeting the Auditor General next week. Members must remember that compensation fund and UIF at the time that they were to present last time that we got that, they have not yet been, the AG was not able to conduct the audit, and they then wrote to the office of the speaker, and then that was accepted, but it has then been completed now. And it is in that we are then going to meet them next week. I am humbly requesting for those of us that were in the meeting of Scopa and Compensation Fund, that if there are questions, obviously we will have some questions that will be interested to ask in relation to what was asked in terms of what was tabled by the Auditor General to Scopa. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to ask those now. We will ask those questions when then the Office of the Auditor General has come and has made presentation to us next week. That will be next week, the 23rd. And I want to say it upfront today so that members prepare themselves that the meeting of the 23rd is going to start at 8 o'clock, precisely because we have got two important issues. And we will then start with the presentation from the Auditor General in terms of the audit that was conducted, the office of the, the entity of Compensation Fund and UIF. So I just want to clear that so that we don't, for those of us that were there, we are not then tempted to want to make to check with the Compensation Fund on issues that were raised in the meeting yesterday. Having said that, I will then hand over. Can Honorable Jacobs mute, please? I will hand over then to the DM if there are any overview. And immediately after DM, Commissioner Mafata will then make his presentation. Thank you very much. Honorable Jacob, can you please mute?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will show my face and switch off the video because we've got an unstable, a very unstable network around here. If you allow me, Honorable Chair, to switch off my video. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Already, Honorable Chairperson has put forward an apology of our minister who's out of the country, and that of our DG who's rushing home for family responsibility. Thank you so much, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, our Compensation Fund Commissioner and Director from CCMA, all our senior officials who are present in this session. Indeed, Honorable Chairperson, we are bringing Compensation Fund and CCMA to brief the Portfolio Committee on their performance between the 1st of April 2021 to 30 June 2021. And these two entities will indicate to the Portfolio Committee the number of targets that they have set for the period under review and which ones they have managed to achieve. And I must indicate, Honorable Members, that and Honorable Chairperson, that we take the work of this committee not just a mere compliance, but also as a push for improvement. So the deliberations that take place during our interactions are taken very seriously, and they are of great help in providing compensation for disablement caused by injuries or diseases sustained or contracted by employees in the context of Compensation Fund. And I'm raising this, Chairperson and Honorable Members, because we are all here because we want to ensure that South Africans receive services that they deserve from the state. For instance, the Compensation Fund is responsible for the compensation and pension benefits, medical benefits, and disability care and rehabilitation. And these service offerings qualify Compensation Fund to a status of an institution. So this institution ought to contribute in the building of capable, ethical, and developmental state. And where there are some glitches, weaknesses, they need to be attended to. And the manner in which they get tackled should never follow the approach of throwing the baby with the bathwater. What needs to happen is to identify that which is a problem, isolate it, and solve it. Honorable Chairperson, one thing that we pride ourselves of is openness and transparency. We approach parliament committees, not only this one, with openness and transparency. And one of the reasons why we do that among many is that we are very much aware that we have no monopoly of wisdom. So we are always eager, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, to tap on your collective wisdom and very ready to be empowered ourselves. So Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, there are problems within the Compensation Fund, that is a fact, and these problems are being addressed, and that is another fact. And they are also being addressed by the committee, your committee, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. And the fact that Honorable Members and this committee took a decision to monitor on a regular basis the audit action plan on Compensation Fund. And as a matter of fact, we were before this committee on the 2nd of February this year, as also the Chairperson has alluded to. That is a week before last, and where honorable committee members were scrutinizing the progress of, or lack thereof of Compensation Fund and audit action plan itself. Compensation Fund presented to your honorable selves and indicated what more this entity ought to still do to addressing historical problems and those that are current. We are on that path, and of course now Compensation Fund is here to brief the committee of its first quarter performance, and CCMA will also do the same. And I'm sure, Honorable Members, at some point we will need to give ourselves, like I said, we'll need to give ourselves some time to discuss these historical challenges that are there as to what can be a remedy the situation. in compensation funds to make sure that we do away with those historical challenges. CCMA is going to tell you, honorable members, that in their first quarter of 2021-2022, referred cases were 38,830 compared to 24,009 in 2020 and 2021 financial year. And settlement rates in the first quarter of 2021-2022 was 79%. And whilst in the first quarter of 2020-2021, it was 78%. So there's a slight improvement of a percentage there. The turnaround time in relation to arbitration in 2021-2022 first quarter was 44 days and up by 1 day if you compare it to 2020-2021 first quarter, honorable members. So allow me, honorable chairperson, to give over to the officials to take you through further details in relation to the period under review. Thank you so much, honorable chairperson and honorable members, for your audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM. Over to you, Mr. Mafata.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll start. If you allow, Chair, can I also just, after the introductions, switch off my camera just so that we don't have a network issue?
I hope we won't have network issue as it transpired yesterday. Please.
Thank you, Chair. We'll try our utmost, Chair, to make sure that we don't have. Chair, I am with the Executive Committee of the Compensation Fund. With me in the meeting today is Ms. Buitimolo Gumbu, Ms. Fazana Fakir, Mr. Johnny Mudiba, Mr. Julian Supen, Ms. Kalahone Bebe, Ms. Kinelo Ndabinde, Ms. Millie Reuters, and Ms. Slindile Mhlungu, who are all members of the Executive Committee of the fund responsible for portfolios. Chair, I'll just jump straight into the presentation. I'll then just switch off my video to make sure that the network doesn't cause any issues. Chair, the presentation, I'm going to jump straight to the quarterly performance, which is at from point number six to point number nine. The first points 1, 2, 3, 4 are points that are already known to the committee that we always reflect in our presentations, Chair. So if you allow, I'll start at slide number 11, which then shows the summary of the performance of the compensation fund for the period ending 31 December 2021. In the annual performance plan, we have 19 indicators. Of these 19 indicators, 8 of them are indicators with targets that are reporting in quarter one of, apologies, so the reporting period is the 30th of June 2021, which is the first quarter of the 2021-2022 financial year. So in quarter one, we had 8 indicators that were due for reporting. And of these 8 indicators, we were able to achieve 6 of them, and 2 of them were not achieved. The 2 areas where we have not achieved the indicators was one under program one, which is administration. I'll give the details in the later slides. And then the second one was program two, which is the coin services, which is the area where we deal with registration and application of claims, as well as assessment of employers. And the other two programs relating to medical services and rehabilitation, we were able to achieve all the targets that were due for reporting as at 30 June 2021. In program one, these are just some of the indicators that are reporting annually that we will not be reporting on in this particular quarter. When we move to the next slide, it just shows also the first indicator that was due for reporting in quarter one was 1.7, which is the percentage of implementation of programs that are in the approved visibility and accessibility strategy. Now, this is a strategy that we've put in place to focus on increasing the reach of the fund to clients, both physically as well as through technology. And so we have various programs that we put in place that we then measure ourselves against to make sure that we are reaching out to clients whenever there is any need for access to our services. So the target was that we had to implement about 15% of the plan or the strategy by June. And as at the end of June, 16% of the strategy had been implemented. The second one that was due for reporting in quarter one was 1.10, which is the percentage reduction in the vacancy rate following the reconfiguration of the compensation fund and the restructuring. We had created a number of new positions that we needed to fill. And then together with also posts that become vacant as we continue to fill some of the posts, either with through promotion internally and also where people leave also for other entities of state. We had the target to reduce the vacancy rate about 15% by quarter one. And to by quarter one, we could only get to about 16%. Which was below the target that we had set for quarter one, though the annual target is to make sure that we are below 10% by end of the financial year. 1.11 was around the monitoring work that we do on those that have been licensed in terms of Section 30 of COIDA to render COIDA services to clients in the mining, iron and steel, as well as construction sector. We then had the targets to make sure that the quarterly reports that we do we use for monitoring these are reported, submitted, and dealt with by the board of the compensation fund. So this was done, Chair. When it comes to program two, there was one indicator that we did not achieve. This indicator relates to percentage of claims adjudicated within 30 working days. We received 31,489 claims, and only about 25,000 of these claims were adjudicated within 30 working days of receipt. The challenges here continue to be two things. One is the continued non-compliance by employers in terms of making sure that when they submit claims, they submit complete claims. So if the claim is not complete, the claims handlers are not able to attend to a claim speedily because we then have to spend time reaching out to the employer and getting the employer to submit whatever information that we need to process a claim. So we have a large number of claims that then sit with status of awaiting information, and we can only adjudicate those that we receive claims. And number two, also the fact that in some cases, reaching out to employers proves difficult because of the middlemen that they use, who in turn do not get the message and the information to the employer for their services or for the documents that the compensation would require for whatever reason that they have. The 2.3 was also reportable in quarter two. We have been able to achieve this. This is the percentage of approved benefits that are paid within 5 working days. We had, by end of June, about 1 billion rands in benefits had been approved for payment, and we were able to pay those, about 966 million of those within 5 working days of receipt. So that makes it about 95% against the target that we had set of making sure that 90%. So we do set a target of 90% to allow for instances where we have downtimes, which may impact on the ability to pay, so that we then build enough room for such instances. Under program three, we had two indicators. Both of them had been achieved. First one was under percentage of requests for pre-authorizations of specialized medical interventions that are finalized within 10 working days of receipt. These are pre-authorizations where injured workers, be it those that are currently in treatment or those ones that have had treatment, but they do require some medical procedure to be undertaken on them. They then submit through their medical practitioners the request for pre-authorization. We received about 2,517 of these in the first quarter, and we were able to deal with about 2,418 of these within 5 working days. The next one is on the percentage of accepted medical invoices finalized within 40 working days. We had received about 146,000 medical invoices by end of June. And of these, about 123,440 were finalized and paid within 40 working days, which gives us an achievement of about 84% versus the target of 80% that we had set. while we see a major improvement with regards to processing of medical claims and invoices, but this 84% could actually be much higher if we get instances where medical practitioners submit the medical reports that are required and also submit invoices that are in line with the requirements of the fund as well as with the injuries of those that they have treated to minimize any delays in payments. But we are happy with the progress that we've made so far. If you go to program four, the one indicator that reports for end of quarter four was the percentage of compliant requests for assistive devices that needs to be finalized in 15 working days. This is an indicator that deals with instances where those that are injured at work need to be given assistive devices, be it is a wheelchair, prosthetic limbs or prosthetic arms and so on. So medical practitioner will submit the request and our orthotists and occupational therapists would then have 15 days within which they need to respond to these requests after having scrutinized the request and made sure that the request is in the interest of the injured worker and the device that is being requested is a device that will be able to assist the injured worker to continue to enjoy normal quality of life that they had enjoyed prior to the injury. And we have received about 307 of these requests by end of June, and about 300 of them had been finalized within 15 working days, which gives us a 98% turnaround time versus the 85% target that we had set for quarter one. This just shows in the slides in terms of those key performance indicators in terms of how we performed versus the target. These are the items that I've already shown, that you can see that it's only one area of all the service delivery targets where we were not able to meet the target, which is the one relating to adjudication of claims within 30 working days. All the others we were able to exceed the target. This just then compares the trend where we were at quarter one of 2020-2021 versus where we were in quarter one of 2021-2022. You can see that it's 50% last year for the same period, and now we are down 75% this year. Part of the issues with regards to those indicators where we've not been able to achieve, first one, it's the issues around vacancy rates, where we have limited resources that we've been able to use to deal with the restructuring and making sure that all these posts that have been recreated are filled and so on. So what we've done, we've developed a recruitment turnaround plan to make sure that we get to less than 10% by end of the year. And we're already starting to see the fruits of that plan where we prioritize specific positions and reduce the turnaround time within which we administratively deal with the appointment process. And also the issues of adjudication of claims. I spoke about the information that limited information that sometimes accompanies claims, which leads to delays in adjudication of claims. We're working with provinces to follow up with employers, and we do reach out to employers. We've appointed client service officers in the labor centers, and the client service officers in the labor centers have been assisting the claims handlers to reach out to employers to get the right documentation that would enable the fund to be able to make a decision on the claim. This just provides the next subsequent slides just shows us the provincial breakdown in terms of the core service delivery indicators. First one being on the prioritizations for medical interventions. As you can see, all nine provinces were able to meet the target, and then the breakdown just shows, you can see Gauteng is the biggest of the provinces, followed by Eastern Cape, and KZN, Eastern Cape, as well as Western Cape. So these are the big provinces in terms of numbers that sees a lot of COVID clients as well. And then we have also the target relating to medical invoices finalized within 40 working days. We can see that the performance there, Gauteng is still the biggest, KZN, Western Cape, and the Eastern Cape, and in Mpumalanga. So what we're seeing is only three provinces that have not been able to meet the target: Gauteng, Limpopo, and the head office team. What they do when they assist provinces where there's invoices that require attention, that either information was not submitted at the time when the claim came in, and they're able to then work through some of these claims and assist provinces to sweep some of these invoices. So we don't really track and measure their performance, but they do what they do. That 38% is just a reflection of what they've been able to assist the provinces with. Gauteng and Limpopo, we have put them on a performance improvement plan to address a number of areas where they are falling short. We can see that the with Gauteng, we will see the results pretty soon, and we will continue to work with them to make sure that they also then come to the party. Under 85% of claims adjudicated within 30 working days of receipt. So this just shows the breakdown. So also when you look at the volume of invoices that we get versus the number of claims for each of the province, we can see that there is a corresponding trend. And we can see that Gauteng East still is the biggest province, Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. In fact, the Western Cape is the biggest. So percentage of claims that have been adjudicated within 30 working days, we can see that only three provinces were able to meet the target, and which is KZN, Mpumalanga, as well as the Western Cape. All the other provinces have fallen short, and we are continuing to address that issue of claims information that is disadvantaging the satisfactory turnaround times for the adjudication of claims. The lockdown period we've had over the last couple of months also have contributed, because in most cases when you reach out to employers, you find that with the work from home arrangements, at the time the employers are able to turn around and give you the information, the time would have lapsed because we haven't had a lot of people back in the offices physically. With the relaxation of the alert level one, we're seeing a lot of people going back to work, and we're confident that these information, the quality of claims and the quality of information that we get from employers will improve because everybody is now back in the office and we're able to get the claims, full information of the claims. The 85% of compliant assistive devices responded to within 15 working days. This shows the breakdown also per each of the provinces, and we can see that all provinces have achieved the target, and the numbers as well still reflects the same size of provinces, Gauteng, KZN, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape also being among the biggest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga as well. I'll end my presentation here. The next slides are just a repeat of the information that I've already presented in terms of the breakdown of the performances of the provinces. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner. Can we then get questions, honorable members? Any takers? I'm trying to check hands. I see one hand. I'm still checking for the other hand. All right, Honorable Mkhonto.
Thanks, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members, the Deputy Minister and her team. Chair, we take note of what you have said, that the compensation fund is still coming with the after the AGIS report, and but I had been a little bit taken aback when the Deputy Minister was making comments on the some of the things that transpired yesterday. Be that as it may, Chair, I have questions and comments. My first question will be to the Commissioner as to does the compensation fund has any outstanding claims that were approved and were not paid from the previous system that are older than 12 months or even 2 years. Because what I get from the presentation is not what people out there that needs to be serviced by the compensation fund are saying. And Chair, to say, I'm not surprised to see Limpopo as one of the provinces that are registered as being underperforming. There was, Chair, I once raised the question to the department itself to say, people are complaining in Limpopo that they are made to sleep at the gates of the labor centers. And I was promised that that matter will be investigated and answers will be given. But we can see here with the compensation fund that Limpopo is still in the reds. The possibility is that they are still giving people numbers. They are still making our people to sleep at their gates. They are still giving people quotas to say today we're going to service maybe 10 or 15 people thereafter. Some of you have to come the next morning, because that is what I presented in the during one of our meetings with the department. And I even made a member statement where farm workers were not assisted by the Pulukwane Labor Center with regard to their UIF in 2020. I made a member statement last year, fortunately with that one, because the Office of the Minister took the matter. Those workers were able to be assisted. But then, Chair, it cannot be that when things have to be done, then the minister has to be hands-on. It cannot be. So these provinces that are underperforming, we really need to take a stand as the committee as to exactly what is it that must be done to the managers of these labor centers. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto. I think that was the only hand. The second one, Honorable Jacobs. Honorable Jacobs.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, I think I also want to, we have a labor center on the Cape Flats here in Athlone, and we also experienced similar problems with a sense of an uncaring department. So my question is also very simple. Is there consequence management for non-performing or dysfunctional labor centers? Is the DJ and the department, what's the improvement plan? I think the question is, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. Can you please, honorable members, lower your hands?
Chairperson.
Honorable Zuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, everybody. Chairperson, does the department have a plan to address under the achievement the number of employees inspected per year to determine compliance with the employment law due to the high vacancy rate in the provinces? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Zuma. I don't see any other hand. Honorable Mafata. I'm sorry, Mr. Mafata. Mr. Mafata.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies, Chair.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just start with Honorable so we have various categories of claims, as I indicated. So we have claims where an employer would have submitted the claim and the claim would have been registered and a claim number allocated, but the progress medical reports and the other claim questionnaires and information that needs to support the claim would not have been submitted. So we migrated, so from the old system, all claims that were in the old system, we migrated them to the CompBusy system. So there is no claim that we left behind. Of the claims that we have currently in CompEasy, if I look at the latest reports, there's about 108,000 claims, including those that we migrated from the old system, that are currently on the status of waiting for information. So meaning either the information would not come because either the person had a minor injury and that person went back to work, there is no medical or progress medical report or any medical claims that needs to come forward. And in some cases, it may be instances of non-compliance by employers. So the teams work through these claims, and we have had a number of projects to call for information. We had a public process to call for information and ask people to come forward. And these are some of the programs that we have in place to assist and to work with even organized labor to reach out and have campaigns that help employees to come forward if they have any claim that has been registered with the fund and has not been attended to because of any outstanding information. The issues, I think, around Limpopo and the, I think I'll go that question with Jacob's question as well around the performance of labor centers. I know that the chief operations officer in the department has a program with the provinces in terms of monitoring of performance of provinces. And there is a close monitoring, even the DG at a departmental executive committee level. The labor center heads, the provincial heads also then report on their performance. And when there is areas for a need for a performance improvement, then we put together for those provinces, that happens. And then when there's a need for support to be provided by any of the branches of the department or the funds, that support gets provided to make sure that we assist the provinces to get to that performance level. The pandemic also has had an impact on the functioning of the provinces as well and the operations of the funds and the department as a whole. So you may find that in some cases, labor centers close because of a need to decontaminate the buildings and so on. And these things tend to happen and affect the service delivery. But I think the issue of service delivery is at the utmost important. It is one of the focus points of the DG and the executive team and the department. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Commissioner Mafate. GM, is there anything that you want to raise before we go to the next presentation? Yes. By the looks, she is not here. Can we then get a presentation from the executive director from CCMA?
My head is up.
Oh, sorry. Honorable Nkonto.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I don't think my question was fully answered. My question is, of claims that were migrated, and that are there claims that are older than 12 months or 2 years? They are migrated, yes, but do we still have them in our system not concluded?
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Mr. Mafata?
Thank you, Chair.
Straightforward question.
Yes, Chair. So the answer is yes, Chair. It is those claims, Chair.
That is the response, Honorable Member. Yes, they still have those claims. Can we? Okay. Is the TM still around? in the absence of the deputy minister, I thought to, can we then?
I'm here, Chair.
Over to you, DM.
Hello.
Yes, I can hear.
Sorry. My apologies, Honorable Chair. I've missed what was, remember I'm using a small gadget. It's giving me grief. I'm using a phone instead of a thing. So I might have missed some of the things. Can the chair please put me up to speed on what should I respond to?
No, I thought you have missed the questions that have been asked.
Not all of them. I think I've heard what Honorable Mkhonto was saying about what I said, but I think the other issues that I might have been able to catch on, I should think that the commissioner will be able also to respond fully on some of those things. I might not necessarily be able to give full details on some of the specific questions that might have been asked. So if it is possible, Honorable Chairperson, we can give to the commissioner to respond to some of the questions.
No, the commissioner has responded. I would have thought that there is something that you would like to add.
Not for now, Chair. Maybe at the end of the meeting, maybe I might say something.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
CCMA, are you ready?
Good afternoon, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, and members of Parliament, and my fellow colleague on the other side. I'm going to try to, if video is giving me a problem, Chairperson. can the Chairperson see my presentation?
We can see your presentation. Can we see your face?
Yeah, I'm trying to do so, Chairperson. Is it showing now?
Yeah, it is. It's fine. Okay.
Thank you. I'm not going to save on the power again. Right. It's on full screen now, Chairperson.
All right.
And goes. Chairperson, with your permission, maybe first let me start with the introduction of the team that is with me today. It is tradition for us, in honor and respect of members of Parliament, to make sure that when we present to you, we're in a position to answer all questions that arise, including technical ones. And we always bring the full complement of the team so that we can be at your service. And today is exactly the same. I have Anna Mukhadinyane, who is responsible for the governance and strategy. I have Umaria Skotse, who is the National Senior Commissioner Dispute Resolutions. This is where cases are done in the different provinces. He oversees the provinces. And then I have Okidiboni Mashakhomu, who is the Chief Financial Officer of the CCMA. And again, Chairperson, with your permission, she will present the financials and I will enhance or supplement if anything is required in that regard. And then I have Unkosi Khona Nkosi, who is the Chief ICT of the CCMA. And then we've got Umthembeni Nanana, who is responsible for corporate services. Your HR and legal services is sitting there. Then we have Uzanele Hlophe, who is the Chief Audit Executive responsible for internal audit at the CCMA. And then finally, I have Asanda Mkaka, who is the City Manager in the Director's Office. Chairperson, this is the team I lead that is at your service for presentation for today. Chairperson, in addition to that, before I go into the meat of the presentation, I will not go into the general slides that talk about our statutory power and objectives and our pillars. We always present that, but if there are any questions, we will deal with that. I'll just go straight to the meat of the presentation of the quarter in question. Now, this specific quarter, Chairperson, you will note, and members, you will note that the focus of that quarter has to do with a very important component that was created by Parliament through the Labour Relations Act. And this is called the Essential Services Committee. And I'm saying it's important, Chairperson, intentionally, because the entire quarter is focused on that. I know, Chairperson, that as the legislature, in what I want to raise, I may be preaching to the converted, but the Essential Services Committee, it's an important committee that is appointed by the minister for the purposes of monitoring and managing the essential services. And by definition, Chairperson, it's important that I state this because it's very important for what we're about to present, that an essential services, as defined in terms of section 2 and 3 of the LRA, it is a service, the interruption of which will endanger the life, personal safety, or health of the whole or any part of the population, unquote. This is a raw definition. So put simply, that the essential services function, it is about the service, not about the people that do the service. It's not about any other thing. The focus is that it's about that type of service. This committee that is appointed by the minister, it is a committee that ensures that there is proper designation that is made on who, which function in which industry is an essential service. So that once that is done, is to make sure that that service is not interrupted. Because if it's interrupted, it will result into the catastrophe I've just described, which is the endangerment of life, personal safety, and the health of a portion of the whole of the population of the Republic of South Africa. So it is very important to that be noted. And you will find also in the Labor Relations Act that the existence or the creation of the essential services is regulated in the main between section 70 to section 75 of the Labor Relations Act. So the report that we're presenting, it is because the essential services, as appointed by the minister, is executing that function through its committee that is established, led by the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, and is executing that function in terms of that or those provisions of the statute. So the function of the Essential Services Committee under the auspices of the Commission or the CCMA is performing that function based on that statutory foundation. So that's why it's important for us to have prioritized in our strategic thrust that essential services be a focus. And we start with that with the first quarter, Chairperson. Now, proceeding into the presentation, I will go straight to slide number 12, because the rest is the general, Chairperson, that I mentioned that I will not speak to unless requested to do so. Chairperson, you will see that there are 5 key targets for that quarter. And one of the things that we will always preach, and I will always discuss this with the chairperson and the deputy chairperson of the Essential Services Committee, that when you look at the function of the Essential Services Committee, it is not an ordinary function that you will find in a case that you will sit and conciliate and arbitrate. This one is much bigger because there's a lot of engagements that happen, there's a lot of stakeholders that happen, and the manner and the method by which they do their cases and investigation is much, much bigger than a normal case where you walk in, the commissioner sits and there's 2 parties. This one is widespread. And the higher pressure of the function of the ESC is that they must ensure that they protect the life, as I said, and the personal safety of the Republic. So we were therefore careful also that when we set targets, knowing the difficulty of achieving those targets, that we don't overburden to impossibility. So we've set targets within our SMART principle as generally accepted. So we've set these 5 key targets for that quarter. And Chairperson, we have achieved all of them. So we're sitting at 100%. So That is the report in as far as the indicators are concerned. What follows now is what supplements this achievement, Jefferson. In slide 13, and we're very happy and very great, it's not for us, it's not just about the achievement of those targets, it's the impact of the achievement of those targets because of the nature of the function that we are talking about. Slide 13, I will not take you into detail, Chairperson, with those. You will see that the quarterly targets, it's 2 and 3, there's an overachievement and there's an explanation why is that. One of the greatest challenges with that target and this type of interventions, whenever a target is set and there's a dependency, especially when there's a stakeholder that must ensure that they participate and they attend that session. If they don't attend, then the target collapses. So the management of ensuring that the stakeholder participates and also achieves what you want to achieve, it's quite a difficult one because you have no full control over it. For us, when it's achieved, we then get very excited about it because then it means we're making progress. There's safety to life, there's safety to everything that I've mentioned, and health on that particular industry or sector. Because of past experiences, we then create more targets so that we find space. If we're not able to achieve, we're able to deal with others as well. We've done so here, hence it also leads to the overachievement of the target. Targets that are set was 2 and we achieved a 3. And then the stakeholders is the same. We have 1 target there and the annual is 3, but we end up with 2. And then in 2, 3, at 1, 3, the annual target in terms of the number of entities engaged to ensure that the minimums to be maintained during the industrial action, it's 84 for the annual, but for the quarter was 21 and we achieved 22. And then the rest is very clear. 1 target achieved, 2 targets achieved there. So that, Chairperson, is all green. And we are happy that we are reporting this to the committee, that the Essential Services Committee is doing very well in doing that. And this is it. This function is done under very difficult circumstances because we went through COVID and all of that. What I can mention in passing, Chairperson, given that we're talking about the first quarter of the 2021-2022, this was in the middle of COVID when it was raging at that time. And I'm saying that intentionally because what you also found in the Disaster Management Act and the regulations that were issued in terms of it, one of the things that myself and the Chairperson had serious difficulties about was to ensure that we separate the meaning of essential services as contemplated in the LRA and the essential services as contemplated in terms of the Disaster Management Act. You will recall that there are certain services that were declared essential by the Disaster Management Act. Then the labor market was confused, thinking that when you're talking essential services defined in the LRA, it means exactly the same thing as the essential services that is done in terms of the Disaster Management Act read together with its regulations. So we've had to maintain that, and even others trying to use the same definition in the disaster management to have their services designated as essential, but using the LRA and vice versa. So we've had to deal with that in a very difficult situation that we had to manage, but the committee has done very well and we're very proud of that. So that is as far as that part is concerned. Slightly outside that, Chairperson, and as far as the broader performance of the organization, I will not take you through. The Deputy Minister has stated that in terms of our referrals that we've received, you will see there that in the period we're talking about, we've received 39,830. And then this is an increase of 66% compared to the previous first quarter of the previous financial year. What this also, Chairperson, the picture that you see is a picture where, because of the COVID, we had to shut down our offices. And at some point we opened them. And then when the adjusted levels increased and then we had to shut them down again, it cost us a lot of money, it cost a lot of pain, it caused postponements, it cost a lot of things. But this is the picture that you see, despite all of those challenges that we've had. And I know that members will be direct and very interested to know, now that you switch to digital platforms, does it cater for everybody? Yeah? No, it doesn't. But we will report on that, Chairperson, the progress we've made on that in the subsequent quarters that followed after that, and what will be happening from the 1st of April 2022, which is a new quarter or the new financial year that we'll be starting at. So, but in as far as that the quarter in question is concerned, that is the performance in terms of the total referrals that we've received, mainly electronically, because we did not have walk-ins because of the open and closure that I spoke about. I will be brief on this slide as well, slide 15, Chairperson. Here, you'll see there's been a very brief decline in terms of our cases referred. I've spoken to that. Here's the a year-on-year comparison. It's in on dashboard format. And you also see the settlement rate, which is a slight decline, but like a 1% change. And then you'll see also the turnaround times, which are in the middle of the pandemic, it declined because there's limited movement on what we can do. But it's not a material change, I think, in terms of the turnaround time. We're still within the best category in that regard. You will also see, as far as our conciliation is concerned, 1% difference. So there isn't too much damage caused. The chairperson will also note that in as far as our public interest matters, we are sitting at 97% that we've settled. All the industrial actions that happened, despite all the difficult challenges that we've had to face. I don't know, Chairperson, if I ever told members a good story. There was one of the distribution centers to the essential services as defined by the disaster management that supplied to your pick and pays and all of that was on strike. And therefore, it threatened that essential service and also the provision of the essentials to South Africa. We were called to intervene midnight. And I must also appreciate that the Minister of Employment and Labour joined me in that. We went together even a day after to try to resolve that matter. And we were successful in resolving that industrial dispute and supported by the minister. And then we resolved it. And it is one of those cases. There's a couple of them. But that one was quite worrying because of its impact or the possible impact it would have had if the strike had continued. So we resolved that, signed the settlement agreement. So it was all happiness. Now, and the rest, Chairperson, I will not speak to because that is, the last one will be the job saved. That's the last part in your dashboard. You'll see that we're still performing at 42% above the target that we've set ourselves. That means that we've saved 4,237 jobs out of 10,000 that we're facing a dismissal. So that is part of the presidential program that we do to make sure that we save jobs and encourage our TERS, our normal TERS and the COVID one. So we've made good progress there. For as long as we still save jobs, it's not so much about the percentages, but while we're still saving jobs, we're quite grateful that we do so. And that is the report that we're presenting to members that we feel that from the service delivery point of view, it shall be appreciated. And Chairperson, I will not spend time on this one. This was greatly affected by the adjusted levels because this is the capacity buildings, the Know Your Rights at trainings that we do in all provinces. So largely we used our online platforms to do so. Members usually are bigger than that. But now we're sitting at adjusted level one. We will be having our walk-ins back effective from April. I'm just reporting in advance. And therefore we'll be able to increase our numbers in terms of the outreach to the extent that we can afford to do so. But it's an important function. But you see the total is sitting at 339 in one quarter. and then progressing further. Chairperson, we are doing our best to manage the pandemic or the COVID-19. We have been on a campaign for vaccinations, and I'm happy to say that my entire executive is fully vaccinated, including myself. We've heeded the call of the president and the minister of health, and also the numbers of our staff are increasing and in ensuring that we protect ourselves. So the internal controls that we've put in place are outlined there. It's not the full detail, but it's outlined there in order to make sure that we protect our staff, our users, and our service providers. So we'll continue to do so, and which was the reason why we could not proceed with open door in all our provinces. But that's the situation is going to change because we've taken a decision to reopen with strong compliance with all of these requirements. We've had deaths, and I will share the stats later in the organization, and also the after effects of COVID. But despite all of that, I take pride in our staff that they still continue to deliver the service that has produced this report, and we're very grateful for that. Chairperson, that is the non-financial part of the report. As I sought your indulgence and permission, I will hand over to our CFO to present the financial results of the quarter in question, and I will supplement where it's necessary, because it's the first quarter, so not much really happens from the financial side other than meeting the financial obligations because the beginning of the financial year. Let me stop at that, Chairperson, and hand over to CFO. I hope I was not too long. Thank you, Chair.
Over to you, CFO.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honorable members, to the Deputy Minister and the colleagues. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity to take you through the financial results of the CCMA for quarter one of 2021-2022 financial year. As the director has said, there wasn't really much happening in quarter one. This is the quarter where we were starting to deploy most of our activities. And those activities were mainly directed at making sure that as an organization, we do not spend over the budget that we had. You can see from the results that we had, Chairperson, we had planned to spend 279 million for that particular quarter. And we spent 221 million for that particular quarter, giving us a variance for that particular quarter of 58 million. The main reason why we had this particular variance of 58 million in that quarter, Chairperson, one, if you look across all the expenditure items that we are reporting on, there was timing differences that attributed to us not spending in line with what we had planned for. And what does timing differences mean? It means that goods and services were not necessarily delivered at the time that we had planned for. And secondly, it means that when it came time for recording these particular expenditures, they were not necessarily recorded within the quarter. Because mainly, or some of them were not necessarily, received within this particular quarter. I think, as I've already mentioned, what is key is the fact that we were deploying our activities around our cost management strategies in that particular quarter. What we have done as an organization, one, when we saw those particular results is, we then immediately said some of the costs need to be reprioritized to make sure that they are utilized, where when we have assessed, we realized that we might not be able to utilize those funds. We have also strengthened our budget monitoring processes to make sure that funds are actually utilized within the organization, and we can, to wherever possible, utilize the funds for the financial year. The slide that we currently have, I'll talk to slides 20 and 21. Those two slides, Chairperson, they are just confirming to the committee that the cash position of the organization, as at the end of this particular quarter, it was pretty much solid. We were able to meet our short-term obligations as we had recorded them in our books in those particular quarter. I will then direct a move to slide 24, because slide 24 talks to our irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the particular quarter that we are reporting to. In as far as irregular expenditure is concerned, we had 6 cases that we had on our books. Of the 6 cases that we had on our books, 3 of them were fully dealt with, 2 already submitted to the National Treasury for them to consider condonation after we had implemented the recommendation of our Loss and Control Committee, and 1 we were still implementing the recommendations of the committee. And 3 of them, the committee was still processing to determine if indeed there was non-compliance or with regards to those particular transactions. In the quarter that we are reporting to, which is quarter 1, Chairperson, there was no new cases that the organization had actually identified and recorded in the books. And as far as fruitless and wasteful expenditure is concerned, we had 4 cases. Of key to note, in the 4 cases that we had, Chairperson, was 1 case which related to interest and penalties with regards to a SARS penalty on our VAT obligations with SARS. This was specifically with regards to 1 service provider who was a foreign supplier. And this transaction actually happened, the transactions that related to the penalties happened prior to 2019, which SARS now notified us that we actually owed them with regards to the VAT obligation. At the time of the end of this particular quarter, Chairperson, we had actually written to SARS requesting that this particular interest and penalty that was identified, if they can please waiver it for us. I think in advance reporting, we have since received a response from SARS where they have actually waived for it. So we did not have to incur this particular obligation for the organization. I will then pause there, Chairperson, and then we will take the question from the CCMA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do not want to supplement what you said. We'll take my questions, if any, from members. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you.
Honourable members, there is the presentation. Trying to check for questions. Any questions? No hands. Honourable Mkhondo. Honourable Mkhondo. Honourable Nontsele. All right, Honourable Mkhondo.
Thanks, Chair. I welcome the presentation. Chair, can we go back to slide number 14? Chair, according to this slide, the sectors that were assisted mostly is business, safety, and so forth, and with very small percentages is agriculture, farming, food, beverage, and so forth. I want to, together with what was presented on slide 16, ask a question, Chair, as to say the outreach programs. The commissioner said most of the outreach programs were done online. And then my question is, those sectors with lower percentages in slide 14, what reasons can the commissioner attribute to that? Can the awareness of the workers in their various sectors be attributed to the reason? For example, and adding to that, their access to technology to be able to participate on these online platforms. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto. Honorable Nontsele.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Chair and the Honorable Members. Thanks for the presentation by the CCMA Chair. The question is also just almost from the same perspective, but different emphasis. My point on slide 14 is for the CCMA Commissioner, just to help us understand as to what perhaps might be the limitations of the vulnerable sectors in not accessing the facility, almost the same as what Honorable Mkhonto has raised. And then my second question would be on the slide 17 with regard to issues relating to COVID and the response thereof. I wanted to check from the commissioner, seeing that the commission has made a groundbreaking a verdict or with regard to whether, for instance, vaccination is in fact a or refusal to vaccinate at the workplace is in fact a dismissible offense. Maybe if you can just help just to reflect on this groundbreaking ruling that the CCMA has made. Obviously not the areas that CCMA may be exposed in the event that the decision is reviewed. Just to reflect on it and what lesson can be learned from the verdict. Yeah, that's in addition to the earlier question, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Nontsele. No other question. The director for CCMA can respond.
Nkosi Sihlalo, let me do so. I was worried that this question of vaccination and our award will come. My run has run out. That's on the lighter note. Chairperson, let me start with Honorable Mkhonto's question. That there are sectors with low referral. What are the reasons for that? Indeed, it is correct that the question from Honorable Mdabe on the verdict and the vulnerable sectors relate to that question. I will attempt to give a comprehensive response to that effect. On Honorable Mkhonto's question, what are the reasons? The first reason is that we had most of the time had our offices closed due to COVID. So most of our users who refer by walking in could not do so. And this one, I'm mentioning it first because it's the one that had a much bigger impact. That's the first reason. The second reason is that our migration from walk-in to technology, while it was a progressive one, which was trying to enhance access. But what we will never defend and what we will acknowledge outright is that the technological approach is not the best inclusive method of accessing the CCMA, because we do know that the majority of our people that we service, while some may have access to technology, but not all of them. And those that are greatly affected by that are those that are in the vulnerable sectors. That's a given, and that we will accept. What we are unable to prove is the extent to which they are affected by it. The only way for us to do so is to do a dashboard analysis that before COVID, how many cases did we receive? And after COVID, during COVID, when the offices were closed, how many did we receive? But what we can comfortably say is that technology and the closure of offices did affect others from referring cases to the CCMA. Even though we were able to hear cases and we've issued directions that says that if parties agree, they can hear cases at the employer's premises, and at Department of Employment Labor offices, they were also closed for the majority of the time. So it did affect a lot of our users in accessing, especially from vulnerable sectors. The other problem that we had was the issue of access. Chairperson, as part of the Department of Employment and Labor family, we attempt at all times to work together with our inspectors because we need to maximize on the inspections. One of the problems that you find in accessing farms are these new rules and regulations created to access those portions. So access is not that easy, and accessibility of the CCMA offices, when you look at the locations of the farms and who's allowed to enter, who's not allowed to enter, and all of those things, cases of intimidation. You remember, Chairperson, a few years ago, there was a case where members of this committee were doing an oversight visit to one particular farm. And then when workers spoke freely about the problems that they're encountering that farm, and which was welcomed by members of the committee and transferred to us and other agencies. Once you left, those employees were dismissed because of doing exactly that. So you can imagine what they go through when there's no one there. They will not refer cases, even if they will suffer at these important consequences. And what we are also worried about in these vulnerable sectors, this will include not only farm workers, this includes domestic workers, also it also includes employees in the construction sector, particularly when it comes to the domestic one, because it's highly privatized. And when you want to access those places, you can't just access because it's a conflict between privacy and access by us to, or the department to do inspections. And the referral of cases also is affected. And sometimes when they go to those houses, there's big dogs there, you can't enter there. And then and also being finding people are completely uncooperative. So domestic sector, especially now that there's this progressive celebration of the increase of the minimum wage and also the parity principle, that they can now earn 23 rand and above like all other employees, inspections need to be maximized to make sure that domestic workers, farm workers and construction workers, that they do in fact get the minimum wage as prescribed by law. And you can only know that if they are able to access the department, they are able to access the CCMA, and we are able to do inspections as expected. If we're not able to do so, therefore the numbers that you see will not change much, because where you're supposed to be feeding from, you are not feeding from that to get there. And also the important point, Honorable Nkonto, that probably needs to be noted is that we are an entity that works on referrals. So numbers you see are dependent on people accessing us or coming to us, but there are impediments, like some of them that I've mentioned. And this also is impacting on the slide 16, on the trainings that we do, because without adjusted levels, like especially level 1, 2, and 3, even in part in level 4, movement was not free. You could not just move because of the pandemic issue. So it severely limited that. And the additional factor that is affected, the referrals, that is also affected slide 16. I don't want to talk about this again, but it's the budget limitation, because we had to cut down on the number of outreach we can do because of affordability. So it's not the only factor, it's one factor that I'm mentioning. And of course, the pandemic itself. So the vulnerable sectors are affected in those regards. Now, let me go to the big one, asked by Honorable Mdabe. Let me confirm to you at this stage the number of cases that we've received so far on the vaccination disputes. We are sitting at 125 cases that has been referred to the CCMA relating to the mandatory vaccination issues. In this regard, we have prioritized all cases relating to vaccines and all related disputes to that. And I must say, Chairperson, the cases relating to mandatory vaccinations, they also vary in terms of the nature. Some of our users claim it is they are being discriminated against because of their status of not being vaccinated. Others claim that they have been suspended because they refuse to vaccinate, and others claim they have been dismissed because of refusing to vaccinate. The biggest part of the disputes we've received on that, it is in relation to dismissals relating to mandatory vaccinations. Now, what then transpired out of those cases? There's something we call redlining cases at the CCMA. That means that matters of public interest, those that attract media attention also, and that affects the society at large. We then redline them. Redlining meaning that it is regulated at the national level instead of being dealt with at the provincial level. Of course, we use commissioners from the different provinces as well. So out of those, one interesting trend that the committee might note that comes out of these cases is that most of workers, when they come to the CCMA and we set the matter down, they end up settling those cases financially without necessarily enforcing wanting to have cases to be decided in terms of awards. If I can just give you statistics, those that we've settled, and mainly there are one or two where there's been a re-employment, but financially is the bigger part. So we've got a total number of 19 cases that were settled. It's not on the slides. Chairperson, I can supply the statistics if need be. And there's also cases that are withdrawn. We have 13 cases that have been withdrawn as a result of that. And we've only rendered two awards. These are the only two cases that have run the full course in as far as the vaccination cases are concerned. And those referred to the Labor Court, we have won. So those that are in progress currently, it's 89 cases. Now, to the two awards, when I'm in Parliament, I have a duty of good faith and a duty to be honest with the committee. And that's what I'm doing now. The one case that was seen as a groundbreaking one, the plan was to make sure that an award that is issued by the CCMA, not only must it be prioritized in that way, not that other cases are not important, not prioritized, but because of the pandemic. This one first award that we've issued that has confirmed that you can actually dismiss an employee if they refuse to vaccinate, it's a case that did not test of red line because it was done by a commissioner. We will never deny that. It was done by a commissioner. It was done by the CCMA. It's an award issued by us. But in terms of its quality and content, it did not meet that standard. Our plan was to issue an award that will assist the labor market and the labor court and also guide the public on how to deal with a mandatory vaccination. Put differently, if somebody reads an award, they must be able to say, so if I want to make sure that the award is, or if I want to make sure that the vaccination is mandatory when it comes to a vaccination, when you read the award, you must be able to hear that or see that. Now, because this award happened at the CCMA, but it was not redlined, we were not aware, and the commissioner did this on his own accord. It's a binding award. Please don't get me wrong. It's a binding award. It's there. But in terms of quality, content, and the whole purpose of redlining cases, it did not meet that standard because we were not aware. I was not aware of it. I'm saying this in Parliament because I don't say it in public because I don't want to appear as if we're discarding our own commissioner. but the Commissioner Daly committed a misconduct here. So the quality of the award and the way it was reasoned, it was very poor. If you look at the analysis, it's only one line, and yet you've got a pack of materials that ought to have been considered to issue such an award. And to give an example, you know, the undertaking I gave to the Deputy Minister and the Minister, when as far as my vaccination cases are concerned, that we'll do our best to make sure that we do the right thing and do a quality award, because I have a duty as an entity to account to the executive authority about matters of national and international importance. So this disappointed us because it did not follow that route of what ought to have been done to make sure that at least you can make any decisions that the commissioner must make, but the law must be right. And the pack of the law we're talking about, it's first the disaster management and its related regulations that were issued. And also this includes directions which are critical that are issued in terms of that, which is annexure A, B, and C that is attached there that must be followed in order to make sure that you issue a decision that is reasonable, or a decision that the reasonable decision maker must make. Together with that pack, you have to have regard to the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and together with the regulations and directions issued, that you analyze them so that when a member of the public wants to know, what must I do for a vaccination to be mandatory? You must be able to follow the chronology. And there's those employees that are below 10 and those that are above 10 in terms of number, in terms of the requirements. But in the main, the award attempts, and there's a second award on the suspension that was issued, that at least that is acceptable, that outlines these materials that I'm talking about. On top of the food chain, it ought to have dealt with the issue of the risk assessment. Chairperson, in the different workplaces, there are vulnerable workers, vulnerable in the sense that they have comorbidities. Every employer and workplace must understand and know their workplaces. And you can only know that once you do a proper risk assessment. And out of that risk assessment, you must have a plan. But the plan that you do must definitely be a plan that involves consultation with the staff that you're dealing with. Once you've done so, you progress now to the next stage, once you've got the plan, because now you understand the risk. You have to develop a policy based on that risk assessment. Once the policy is developed, which again must be participatory, this is where you are able to see exactly the categories of employees and functions that you need to vaccinate and those that you don't need to vaccinate. And in the process of doing so, you will get different types of objections, which includes medical objections and constitutional rights objections. Medical objections must involve doctors' reports, further tests that must be done, that the consequence of vaccine. The regulations and directions are very clear in as far as what you must do about the effects of COVID. And it does create definition what constitutes vulnerable workers. Once you've done the policy, and when people raise objections as far as constitutional rights are concerned, you don't ignore that. You accommodate that because it's a constitutional right. Once you've run that journey and you've taken care of all of that, and you've counseled employees about what the whole thing means, the rights issue and the medical issue, it is only at that stage that you can make a mandatory policy for vaccinations, because it's reasonable, is based on credible materials. So part of the planning during the case was to invite experts. We have two experts from the Human Science Research Councils who were prepared to come and testify and tell us they are advising the committee with the president. So we, the command council. So we had planned to do so. So this award, in between, we could not do so. I have myself as director to the deputy minister. The minister said, I will do cases myself to make sure that we assist the labor market. Fortunately or unfortunately, the five cases I've done, they've all been settled and people don't want to proceed and do that. So we could not take it. The last one I've done was even yesterday, where we still tried to do the same. So as matters stand, full-time commissioners, part-time commissioners will be allocated those cases, 89 that are outstanding, in order for us to achieve that. But you will find different findings on vaccination because there's different factors that must be considered, as I said, and because there's been those misinterpretations. But we're still pursuing to get the best possible award that we'll call our champagne award that will guide the labor market on what needs to be done. Hence also my involvement with the best team that I have to make sure that we do so. So while it may appear to be a groundbreaking because the first award made, but it's not the best award, we can say it's the award that guides the labor market about what must be done. The suspension one done by Peter Fenter is a good one, so because the important laws are quoted. But the campaign continues to get the best award on discrimination, suspensions, and dismissals relating to COVID-19. So finally, on that, Chairperson, what also is important that I must state, when dealing with mandatory vaccinations, the workplaces are encouraged not to be trigger happy in dismissing people for refusal. That I've said it in the media, I've said it in the ENCA, I went in all the platforms and said so, that people should not do that. What is now coming out is that some of the employees who are refusing to vaccinate, some employers are not complying, yes, but now we have operational requirements, dismissals that are happening. So they retrench you if you don't vaccinate. That's the new trend that is coming out of those cases. So we want to make sure that in all the different nature of disputes, unfair discrimination, dismissals, misconduct, operational requirements, that we issue a proper award on what we think is the right way to do. Of course, that will not be the last word because it may be reviewed to the labor court. But here's the problem with that. The problem with that is that reviews take 2 to 5 years to resolve. So if you take these cases on review, it means by the time they're finalized by the labor court, we'll probably be quite advanced in as far as the pandemic is concerned, and the finality can only be raised there. And I'm only talking labor court because others are prepared to go to the constitutional court, which means it will run to Concord. Now we're looking at 5 years or 7 years to conclude a case where answers are required now. With capacity, Chairperson, with our outreach program, and also with the number of cases that we have, we had planned to deploy all commissioners on all these cases, but promote mediated solutions, workplace mediations, where we sit down and say, from the experts, this is what needs to be done. Because at the end of the day, it's not about the vaccination. It's not about the dismissal. It's about protecting life and balancing it with the sustainability of the existing entity, that it must continue to operate without an employee infecting another employee or the employer failing to take reasonable steps as required by the occupational health and safety to protect workers in the workplace. And the new question, which Mr. Mafata can comment on, is now whether employees have claims, which we've seen the amendment, that employees can now claim in terms of the compensation, because that will be seen as a work-based health issue relating to vaccinations. Chairperson, I have been very elaborate on this one because it was necessary, because it's something that is currently happening. And in part, I'm quite happy that Honorable Mdabe has asked this question about the verdicts that we've issued. But when you see difference in outcomes from the CCMA, it's not because we're confused. It's because the nature of the processes that we have, as I've explained, differ. So you'll find different outcomes. But what we can't be wrong about is the interpretation and application of the law that we must do correctly, consistently as the commission. And then the courts will interpret eventually if it gets to that. I hope, Chairperson, that answers the question. If I need to add, I will add. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Just one correction. It's Honorable Nonsele that asked the question.
Oh, Nonsele. Oh, sorry. I apologize, Chairperson. Sorry, I apologize. I'm sorry, Honorable Member Nonsele. I apologize.
Honorable Chair, I wanted to make a follow-up question.
Honorable Nonsele.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the incisive and the quite revealing analysis that the director has made in evaluating the outcome, whether groundbreaking or what. I think I will leave that to him. With the weighting of the content, the follow-up question, Chair, is whether, for instance, given the analogy that he has given, Whether, for instance, is it not going to be, what does he think with regard to how, for instance, commissioners should deal with these matters? I'm not sure whether, for instance, would talk about minimum standards that must be met by an award, because I would agree with him that almost in almost all the awards, you hardly get the weight of argument or the rationale for the verdict. Too often you get a one-liner or a two-liner verdict that says based on this consideration, therefore the dismissal is upheld or it's not upheld, whatever. So maybe if we can hear from him how he would deal, or he thinks that the kind of weaknesses can be dealt with. Because obviously the points that he has made, I think they are very much valid, and they are the points that need to be taken into account if standards have to be set and the labor market has to be assisted in the manner that he correctly directs. Thank you, Chair.
No, Honorable Mkhonto, is that a legacy hand? Well, I will allow you to, because you have responded to that. As much as this issue of the award in terms of the vaccination was not part of the presentation, but well, it's something which is of public knowledge and public interest. I would allow you to briefly respond, Executive Director, on that question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Nontsele, on the question. I apologize again for misquoting your name. Thank you. The question is a very, very important one. And I want to say this with serious passion as possible. What we are preaching, and we are arranging now a special session to talk to commissioners to answer exactly the question that you've just asked now. The first thing that we are going to do, and what we expect commissioners to do, is to be completely conversant with the law that is applicable to vaccinations. That's the first thing. And what leads the pack, it's the constitutional consideration of the rights of the employers and the rights of the employees, particularly on the rights of employees. The highest court in the land, the Constitutional Court, has held that when we resolve disputes of employment law, at the center of the Labor Relations Act, it is job security. That we must be very clear, because that's what the Constitutional Court has said. And in doing so, we are protecting the constitutionally protected rights to fair labor practices. So a commissioner that sits with a case must reflect that. Secondly, the commissioner must be sensitive to the impact of COVID when you're dealing with a COVID-related case. I'll give you an example. There's a case that went to the labor court of Escort, right? In that case, the employee, knowing that he's a COVID positive, went into the workplace, started hugging other employees, even those that have comorbidities such as heart ailments and blood sugars and blood pressures. And he acted negligently in doing so in the workplace. The employer found him and he was dismissed. The labor court was very scathing about this reckless behavior of an employee in the workplace. While we talk constitutional protection and recognition of occupational health, it does not encourage reckless conduct. That's important. So that relates to fairness. On top of that, a commissioner in dealing with this case must display care. Really, an employer must reflect and show care in dealing with this case. Because not only are you dealing with a matter of life and death, the employment must sustain, and also the employee's work must be protected. But at the same time, we've got to have one clear objective: to contain the spread of COVID. So the approach that we must take into account all those principles. They are also led by this important principle of ensuring that the case is resolved expeditiously. Because of the complications I mentioned, that cases might drag and for years and all of that, which is a problem that I think Parliament at some point needs to pay attention to. That if I have a case like the ones that we're talking about, I get an award that says I must go back to work, and the award is reviewed, and it takes 3 years. It goes to the Labor Appeal Court, it takes 7 years. It goes to Concord, it takes 10 years. Some of the people who have those awards, they die waiting for the outcome to be finalized. Some of these cases, they go that long route purely on a technical issue, not at the substance. After 10 years, like the Metrobus case that took 10 years, it has to go back and start afresh again from there. And people lose interest and the cases disappear. We cannot expose COVID-related cases into the same equation. There has to be that appreciation by the commissioner when they're dealing with the COVID-19 case, that it's about the pandemic, protecting others, and not act like the case that you see in Escort that the court has been very scathing about. This is the entire package that the commissioner must display. And eventually, when he issues an award that is sensitive to those important imperatives, the commissioner must make sure that the award that you issue is not only resolving the dispute, it is done expeditiously, and it also educates the public, because the awards that we issue and the court's rulings that they issue is not just meant to resolve the dispute only, but it educates the members of the public on what they must do to do things right. But Chairperson, delay in finalization of cases because of the very legal system that we've created is not assisting in terms of social justice, because you can't wait 5 to 10 years to have one award resolved on a case that you thought you won. With the pandemic cases or vaccination cases, it's going to be worse, because by the time you reach 10 years, we'll probably be gone with and done with the COVID issue. So there has to be legislative and policy intervention that can give us a solution to that. With the CCMA, we will be sensitive to that. And the commissioners, when they deal with these cases, they'll be sensitive to that. That is my proposition, Chairperson, that I can give, that we will be educating our commissioners to do and have been doing to make sure that we get the perfect award. That's why I also rolled up my sleeves as a commissioner and as a lawyer, together with my managers also, who are commissioners, in dealing with these cases, because we understand the sensitivity with me. Because if you miss the sensitivity, that is the matter of life and health, in approaching that case, we'll be making a big mistake. With that package, with expedition, with sensitivity to national and international importance of this case, that's the kind of commissioner that we expect, who will deal with it with respect and care, with diligence in dealing with that case. Not that the same quality is not expected for other cases, but this is a matter of urgency and emergency and life and death, both domestic and international. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, very executive director. I think we have
Are you still with us, Chair? Or is it me who's lost?
We are all lost, Whip.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I'm here. So, no, thank you very much, Executive Director of CCMA. I think we have now come to the end of our presentations, and I really want to thank both presentations. We will maybe at the appropriate time. The DG is not here. The ministry is not here. We will then have to again. having listened to the response, but what must be understood is that, yes, it's something, I think I need to repeat this. This is a matter of public interest, but I think it's going to be necessary that we really, again, if possible, after having consulted, get a response and a report on the matter in question that was asked around the issue of the vaccine and the award that has been given. Mr. Mafata, I am going to circulate to you an email that has been sent to me as a chair by a citizen that is outlining the challenge that he has been subjected to for the last 12 years. I'm going to circulate that to the minister, to the PLO, and to you. And within, I don't even want 7 days, Mr. Wababa. I want a response of that thing. I want a response by Monday. I want to be responded to on what has then been done and what are you proposing to be done in terms of what that worker has reflected to me, because it is a reflection of what really is taking place at the workplace. But it's also a reflection, as we have always been said, we have been saying, knowing very well that the CCMA is doing its level best to empower worker leaders and workers in terms of understanding their role, their rights, and their responsibilities. But when a worker is quite aware of his or her rights, and the institutions that are supposed to assist workers, at times those institutions are dragging their feet, is completely unacceptable. So that's why I am saying it here without any fear or favor, that on Monday, Mr. Wababa, Monday, I want a response. I am not taking any no about this one. It's quite challenging. Having said that, members, we are meeting Mr. Sakaza, the 23rd is next week. Am I correct?
That's correct, Chair. Next week, Wednesday,
8 o'clock, honorable members. We are meeting the office of the AG in terms of the outcome of the audit on UIF and compensation fund. And after that, we are getting a presentation from the department on their added mandate. We have been asking for this for the last 2 years. Next week, we are getting that presentation. I so wish we could have been afforded an opportunity to be virtual, but unfortunately, to be physical, but unfortunately we can't because of the challenges that the Parliament is faced with. Thank you very much, and enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your constituents' work until we meet again next week on Wednesday, 8 o'clock. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye.
Thank you,
Chair. Thanks, Chair. Thank you. Doesn't even mamelo koko le present a direct.